What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Canis Hoopers family. Today, I am doing another show that is a crossover show with Brendan Headke from Believe in Timberwolves. As usual, it is his show, but I'm obviously the guest, and we've got it running on both channels. We had a really good conversation about Minnesota's struggles, everything to do with those struggles. We kind of ranged across all Timberwolves topics. So as usual, I'll insert that audio here, and it'll be led by him kind of interviewing me. But yeah, the conversation was really good, so I hope you guys enjoy. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Believe in Timberwolves podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Headke. And on today's episode, I do have a special guest, the creator of Howls and Growls, the newsletter, which all of you need to go check out and subscribe to right now. That is Jake Painting. Used to be Canis Hoopus, I guess technically still, because your podcast is still part of the family. So yeah, Jake is here to talk basketball. So how's it going, Jake?
Yeah, very well. Still licking the wounds from yesterday's loss, but yeah, pretty well, and I appreciate the love for the Substack, but yeah, I'm really happy to be here and talking to you today.
Yeah, so Jake and I don't really have too much planned for this episode because I think it's going to be a lot of opportunity to free flow and kind of talk about this terrible losing streak and everything that the Timberwolves are going on right now. But before I do that, the Timberwolves did play Friday night, their first game of their city editions. And prior to the game, I was seeing a lot of hate for the gray uniforms that they wore the Jimmy Butler year, like the first city edition uniforms that the Timberwolves had. And I'm not a fan of the hate because I do like them. So what I'm going to have Jake and I do, and I kind of sprung this on him, but we're going to rank. I think there's been five. There's been the gray ones, the purple prints ones, the light blues, the black ones from last year with the stars on the side, and then this year's blue ones. So I want to start at the bottom, and I want to know, out of those five, because there's been some, like, they had the white prints unis, but I think those were technically, like, the earned edition, right? So those don't count.
Yeah.
And then they had the black with trees the one year, but those also don't count. So which is your least favorite from those five?
I want to preface it by saying that I think they're all good, which is weird in Timberwolves world for something to be universally good. But I think we're on the same page, at least semi on the same page, that the grays are not a bad jersey. I think the blues, the baby blues, are probably my least favorite. I have a baby blues one and I do like them, but I think I would have them just below the grays. I think the baby blues, they're a little boring. Like the MSP was a little plain as well. I know it's kind of a nod to Minneapolis St. Paul, but like it's not my favorite, and it's for a city edition jersey. I like them when they're a little bit bold, and the light blue is a bold color, but not very exciting, I think.
Yeah, and that's probably what I would put fifth on the list. I like them, like you said. Literally the only Timberwolves jersey I own is actually a light blue one. I have two basketball jerseys. I just ordered one. I can't remember who it is. I think I ordered a Jaden McDaniels one.
Oh, that's
good. And I don't even remember what colorway I ordered, but I ordered one. But that'll be the second Wolves jersey I have. And then the only other jersey I have is like the black snakeskin Kobe Lakers jersey.
Yeah, like the black Mamba jersey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And my college roommate got like the number 8 one, and I got a 24. Those are the only two jerseys I own. I own like a Adidas Chris Bosh white and red, like Miami Heat one too. But yeah, I just don't have a lot of jerseys. But I would echo what you said. I think they're all good. The baby blues are a little bit boring, but I will say this about those. They made for some fire merch, like overall, like sweatshirts, like hoodies. I think that stuff was done better than the jerseys were.
Yeah.
I love the color, and they were pretty, but they were pretty plain. And that's why I probably have them last on the list. So I'll go ahead. You did that one first. I'll do this one first. This is going to be a very, very controversial thing that I'm about to say right here. I'm And I think you know where I'm going. I'm putting the Prince jersey sport.
No, I thought you were gonna say the most recent ones, the tree.
No. We'll get to that.
This is blasphemy.
Really, we talked about this already. We like them all. I love the white Prince jerseys way more than I like the purple ones. But again, what I said with the blue ones, they made some fire merch with this jersey.
Oh yeah.
But I just didn't love the jersey as much as I loved like all the merchandise that came out with it. I'm going to get a lot of hate from the people that listen to this.
And I honestly, I encourage
and from the person sitting across from me.
That's blasphemy.
I do love the boldness of purple. And I'm just saying, stylistically, like they have a ton of meaning to the state of Minnesota with Prince, and he's like a legend. But like when I'm thinking about jerseys, I am not thinking about anything. I don't care about meaning or anything. Right now, I'm just talking strictly looks. They're fourth. I struggled to put them above my or below the next one I'm going to say, but I'd say they're fourth.
The colorway, though, like the colorway on those make up for any stylistic deficiencies. Like
I don't like the shoulder thing. You know what I'm talking about? The little with like the triangles on the shoulders.
Yeah.
I think it just looks out of place. But the color scheme is fantastic. I don't know. I knew you were going to not like that one.
I'd have the gray ones fourth. I don't know if I liked the grays more than I should because the team was good when they wore them. And that really like sticks in my mind.
I have great memories.
I think they wore them every game
against Denver.
I think they wore them every game in the playoffs. Like, so maybe
I think they did too.
And even though they got swept or gentlemen swept, I still remember that being just like a great time to be a Timberwolves fan before the Jimmy Butler
and they,
stuff.
They wore them game 82, and I was at game 82 against Denver. And like, I think that's why I really like them. So I'll say this, they're my third. So I have them right above the Prince. And I struggled with that order there, but they're very plain, but I think they're like clean. You know, like all white jerseys, sometimes you think are like really clean.
Yeah.
I think those grays are really good. And I love the fading from front to back that they do with that side thing that they used on this year's too. I love that. So that's why I'm like, I'm okay with it. Like, I really liked them. They kept them simple. And yeah, maybe the fond memories kind of play into that fact when Jimmy Butler didn't hate Minnesota. So they're third for me.
All right. Well, I've got the stars, the Aurora green and blacks from last season. I really like those, and I think they look better in person. I have one of those as well, an Anthony Edwards one, and that might be my favorite jersey to just wear. But that could be because it's Anthony Edwards. But like,
yeah,
they're a good jersey. I don't think they're great, but I think they're really nice. The black jerseys, I have a soft spot for all black jerseys with a bright color, like the any Phoenix black jersey or the Utah one that they've been using for like four straight seasons. Like, they're dope as well. So I would go the black third, and then second I would have the remix, I think.
Okay.
I don't love the dark blue back. I didn't know that until last night. Like, we'd only kind of seen it front on. I don't love that it fades. I know it's kind of a nod to those gray jerseys, how they fade from one tone to the other. I would have preferred them if they just had like dark blue stripes on the side and they were light blue still on the back, but I didn't love the dark blue. There's a lot going on them. They're a bit busy, but they're dope, man. Like, anything with the trees are good enough for me. And the font as well, the kind of old KG era font, they're good. They're a good jersey.
Yeah, I think they knocked it out of the park with those. You kind of said what I wanted to say about the black ones. Those are my second with the stars. Anthony Edwards had like the dunk of the and best dunk in NBA history with those on. So that probably helps too. But I thought those were really clean black with the subtle like lime green and gray was very good. So then the remix are obviously my number one. I love the blue and green. I think they did even better with the trees because the old ones, like the trim was black and green trees.
Yeah.
Where now it's like green and blue. And I think that might even look better than like the retro blues with the black and green.
I think obviously the first all
black
jersey, with
black and green are good.
I think they're the first jersey where I've ever looked at like the release and thought, like, I need a pair of those shorts. Like the shorts are mad.
Yeah, that's a good point. Crazy, yeah, you never just are like, I need the shorts. But those ones you do with the old Shep logo and the new Shep logo. On each side is
just
fantastic. I do have
one pair of shorts, like they're not official shorts. You know, the ones with the wolves on the front? They have like the Lakers ones. Like, you know, how the Lakers,
like the
LeBron wears the Lakers across the front.
Yep.
I have a pair of those. They're like the old blue and green with the wolves logo across the front. Like the very first wolves logo there. So I like that they use that kind of color scheme. But the shorts with the old Shep on one side and the new logo on the other side. Awesome. And they look good in person too, which I think the jerseys always look better when they're on the players, but I thought they looked really good. Like the Wolves looked good last night physically.
Look good, feel good, don't play good.
Yeah, stylistically, they knocked it out the park. On court production, not so much.
I never noticed how close like the new logo and the old logo actually they look pretty similar, which I never really put together, but. So then your number one's obviously the Prince jerseys and that.
Yeah. And I don't need, I'm not going to hammer home that point too much. The script writing is awesome, man. The script and the color scheme, I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah. And like, to be fair, I totally get why people love those the most. And you want to know the best part of this? Purple's my favorite color. So the fact that those aren't my favorite jerseys tells you that like I just like those other ones better. But anyways, I think that was I was ready to say it because I knew I was gonna have a controversial take on it. But let's go ahead.
Before we move on, what do you think of their normal jerseys, like their icons and their
trash.
They're terrible, aren't they?
I'm not a fan of the stripes. Like Washington always had this, like the few lines. I'm not a fan of them. They could be worse because they're
clean,
plain, and they're not an eyesore.
Yeah,
but like
they're not the green. You're not a green jersey fan. Tell me you're not a highlighter green jersey fan. They're the worst jerseys.
No, I don't.
In the NBA,
I don't hate them. Some people hate them, but I think they're pretty bad. I think they're pretty bad. And I'm going to be going to a lot of Saturday games this year, so I'm going to be seeing those jerseys a lot.
Laurie and Rodriguez, the first thing they need to do is come and rebrand the jerseys. Give us the trees on a daily basis.
The logo. I don't think we need a full rebrand. No, we just need new jerseys.
Yeah, that's the easiest way to appeal to the fan base without actually doing anything of importance. Just give them the old jerseys back.
I wish they would use these blue ones all year.
Yeah.
I think they rock. I think they rock for sure. But anyways, let's talk about basketball, even though people maybe would rather listen to that jersey conversation more than basketball. Before we do that, though, I'm going to get a quick break in, and then Jake and I will be right back. All right, Jake. So we are back trying to talk about whatever product has been put on the court. Timberwolves are currently on a 4-game losing streak. We're recording this Saturday night. So they don't play again until Monday. So by the time this is out, you still have a full day to listen to it before another game happens. The first loss was fine. I think because the first loss would have been the Denver loss.
Mm-hmm.
That was the loss where it was like, okay, you grinded it out. You had a decent lead, but that was the least concerning loss they've had all season. I was just like, okay, they lost to a solid team. Both teams were just grinding it out. And we just made a couple more mistakes than they did and it cost us the game. But then they lost to Orlando. Man, not good. Not good at all. And then the two Clippers losses. The first one was really concerning. And the second one was too, just kind of in their own like, you know what? Let me take that back. The first one I wasn't as concerned just because like when a team shoots that good, you're going to lose regardless. But the second one, when you have a 20-point lead, blow it and end up losing by 20, that's super concerning. Not to the point where I'm like done with the season and like think it's a wash, but something's got to change. And really, it's got to be offensively. Like I know they've had some defensive times where they didn't look that great. But last season's Wolves would have made all these teams they've played look good offensively too. and they haven't done that. So I'm still really encouraged by the defense, but the offense needs to start getting it together. So I guess I think you're the best person in Timberwolves Twitter, Timberwolves writing space for like understanding play calls and play sets and things like that. Do you think there's been a lack of Chris Finch involvement in the offense, or what do you kind of think? Is it play calling? Is it personnel just not hitting shots, combination of both? How much do you weigh each part of that, I guess?
I think it's a combination of both. I wasn't as concerned about it before this little Clippers series, where I thought they've been running pretty good plays most of the season. I think this season compared to last season, they're running less plays, which I expected now that Finch kind of has his fingerprints a little bit more all over the team, and he isn't trying to, I guess, force feed them buckets all game. He's more trying to install a system and let them play the system and run these plays themselves and make read and react decisions themselves. So I expected a little bit less, and it has been. I still think they ran a lot of really good stuff at the start of the season, and the shots just weren't going in. And that happens. That I think I'd spoke on that I wasn't overly concerned about the offense through the first kind of few struggling offensive games. Shots aren't falling really around the league, and guys like Beasley and Russell were shooting under 30% for those first whatever 5-6 games. Like, they're getting good looks, especially Beasley. The sets Chris Finch runs for Beasley are really good, even in this Clippers series, that he just runs some awesome sets for Beasley. But I was really concerned about, and I am really concerned about the way they're using Towns at the moment. I hated that second half, the insistence to post him up. I don't like how posting up in general, really. Like, it's not, I understand that being able to collapse the defense and make him make plays to shooters is a strategy that will work, because the defense inherently will get sucked in towards Towns. But I don't know. I just think that the opportunity cost for just having him shoot 10 threes a night, face up in the post rather than back down, like get him at the elbows like they do with Jokic. I get they're trying to kind of use him in a Jokic way where he can command the floor as a playmaker from the post. But I'd love to just see him used as a guy who can catch at the elbow and can turn and face plays. It's so much harder to bring double teams at a big man when he's facing the ring. It's so much easier to bring that double from the baseline when he's facing away from the rim. And then I don't think Towns makes decisions quick enough to constantly be put in those situations where he is got 2-3 guys on him at all times. And then you compound that with guys missing shots, even when he does manage to whip a pass out to them, and the offense just completely dies, and you're left relying on Anthony Edwards' isolations, which usually are Anthony Edwards' pull-up threes, which is a problem unto itself. But I do trust that Finch is smart enough to work it out. And like last night, whenever they ran sets for Cat to get him a three-point lock or to get him a quick hitter in the mid-range where he can turn and face and hit a cutter, it worked. He shot 7 of 11 from the field. Like, we have all been banging on about how poorly Towns played, or about how much he struggled kind of to get a rhythm. And he had like an 80% true shooting. And the struggle is that he can't get the ball, because they're dumping him in the post and trusting that the defense will start to respect the guys around him. And like, Finch is finding out what we probably have known for years, is that teams will not respect anyone on the Timberwolves but Karl Anthony Towns until, you know, they consistently make shots. The reputation of Malik Beasley, or the reputation of Jaden McDaniels being a 37% catch and shoot guy, it's not as strong as the reputation that if you shut down Towns, you beat the Timberwolves. So a long-winded answer to your question, but I think that if you use Towns the right way, you can still have him as a playmaker. You can still open up shots for other guys and open up cuts for other guys without kind of, you know, sitting him in the post and inviting pressure to him.
Yeah. And I guess I thought we'd see more of like a Princeton style offense mm-hmm. from this Timberwolves team, with a lot of cat catching at the elbow, guys cutting off of him, making plays that way. And we haven't seen, like you said, I don't get the insistence on throwing it to Cat in the post and making him, that's where he draws his offensive fouls.
Yeah.
That's where he gets frustrated with the referees. Everything that takes him out of the game happens in the post. And I think he's a solid post player, but he doesn't have the personnel around him to allow him to be that, because the shooting just hasn't been there. So they've been like, we take Cat away in the post and we live with whatever happens if he dishes it out of there. I don't understand where it's been coming from, like the insistency on Cat getting the ball in the post. But I guess I'm not like, and this is maybe just me being super optimistic, but I'm not overly concerned about the offense, because when you think about this team, post All-Star break last year, they had the 11th highest offensive rating in the mm-hmm. league. That was with the same, and albeit missing, like, you know, players missing time. Malik Beasley didn't play like at all, I don't think. I don't know if he played for Chris Finch at all last season.
I think he played four games.
Maybe four games.
Yeah,
between
the suspension and the injury. And he was clearly
he didn't look good.
No, he was rusty.
Yep. And he didn't look good. But you still had D'Lo out for some of that time. But then you had Cat, you had Ant. So you had your four best scorers. You still had Jaden McDaniels. You still had Jared Vanderbilt playing minutes, Josh Okogie playing minutes. But you also had someone like Ricky Rubio, who wasn't a shooter, replaced by Patrick Beverley. You had Juancho Hernangómez replaced by Torian Prince, which in theory
somehow been worse than it should have been.
But in theory, at least the same level of shooter
and
as Juancho.
Shooters are volatile.
And a better defender.
Yeah, shooters are volatile. Yeah. Like Prince will have a stage where he shoots 50% for six games straight. Like,
yes.
that's just kind
for
of what
sure.
happens.
So I guess what I'm saying is an offense that was 11th, post All-Star break, that's a big sample. That's 36 games last season. I don't get how they should end up being worse than what they were then, when they have as much, if not more, with more time with their coach, with theoretically a healthier roster. So I think it'll turn around, but it needs to turn around soon before they get too far out of, you know, I don't want to doomsday this and say 8 games in the season, they're going to find themselves out of the playoff picture, but they have a tough stretch coming up. Mm-hmm. They play like Memphis, Golden State, both LA teams. Like, those are the next 4 games. Like, that's four, that could be an easy 4 game loss. You're on an 8 game losing streak, and all of a sudden you're 3-9 instead of, you know,
and that's a
you're
tough,
hoping to be like
tough hill to climb to even get back to like, to the, you know, play-in level.
And the good news is right now, I mean, they're only 2 games back from the third seed, because the whole Western Conference is like between 5-3 and 3-5.
Yeah. So, well, if you're looking for,
luckily, everybody's kind of been teetering on like mediocrity.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're looking for silver linings, like, there's a lot of teams in the West right now that are struggling that should be better than they are. It's probably only Memphis that are like the teams that we in that, you know, 7-11 range that we were like, assuming the Timberwolves would be in, that are playing well. Like, Portland aren't playing well. The Pelicans are probably almost done and dusted before.
They're 1-9.
Yeah.
They're like, done. I mean, they're done.
Sacramento are playing,
until Zion
Sacramento
comes back.
Are playing well, but there's a couple of other teams in there that are playing a lot worse than you'd think. So, like, there is, if you're standings watching, there is kind of hope that the Timberwolves are still in that pack of teams. But if you're going on what we've seen the last 4 games, it feels like such an uphill battle to get to that level, because they've been terrible, and it's so early in the season. I 24 hours after the game, I always kind of come back down to earth a little bit, and you think like it's been 8 games. At any point, like, if they beat the Grizzlies next game, we probably all are back on cloud 9, or at least cloud 6. Like,
yeah.
So it's a volatile kind of season, and when it's so early and teams are playing, like, we've seen the Timberwolves start seasons 10-8, you know, and then win 19 games or whatever, 24 games.
Yeah.
Like, it can go really bad early, or it can go really good early, and that can really not mean too much towards the end of the season. So like, they can definitely figure it out. I just think that they need to figure it out pretty quickly. And I do trust Finch. Finch has always, since he's been here, been really good at making adjustments and making yep. smart adjustments in game and from on a game to game basis. So I hope, and I optimistically hope, that he will be looking at it and thinking like, there's more we can do to get Cat involved. I think he went a little bit the other way. They spoke about getting Cat involved after that Orlando game. And I think the way they went was, let's just get him in the post, get him close to the rim. Let's, you know, he can dominate Zubats, he can dominate most big guys, and he is really good in the post when he can get single coverage or he can get deep yep. post position. But clearly LA game planned that right out of the Timberwolves and really took advantage of it. So I'd like to see him just go with a little bit different, playing like Dirk. He is, you know, he's a Dirk type player. He's not Embiid or Jokic. Like, I think they need to play to his strengths. He's shooting like 6 threes a game. I'd like to see that doubled, honestly. Like, I know some people hate watching a center shoot threes and jack up threes all night.
I love it.
Yeah, like,
when your center's literally like a career 40% three-point shooter.
Yeah, and he's shooting so good this season too. Like, and he can shoot off.
And that opens up so much. Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, he's pulling out a big defender, even if they're not going with the center, somebody else is getting pulled out, which just opens up cutting and all sorts of stuff.
There's been no cutting this season. The cutting frequency has been so low. And I think that if you can kind of create space behind or in front of Towns, that'll open things up for Edwards to cut a little bit more. McDaniels was such a good cutter last season. And I can't even remember a single, you know, cutting dunk that he's had or cutting layup that he's had. Like,
I can't believe I'm about to say this, and I thought of this in the middle of last game. It might be Jake Layman time. It might be Jake Layman time, just simply because he is literally a very, very high-quality NBA cutter.
Mm.
And he's not really that negative of player,
yeah,
per se. He's just kind of like in a weird role, but like, if you get him surrounded with guys with high energy, he's going to play good defense and he'll space the floor a little bit. He's not a great shooter, but he can make an open three, but he's going to cut very well. And even if you just throw him in there to show the team that it's possible, like, it might be worth it, but I know you're already struggling because you have a 11 man rotation as it is.
Yeah.
And you don't want to keep adding that mix, but like, somebody's got to cut. You don't have any rim penetration outside of Anthony Edwards. So a cutting is the next best thing
mm-hmm.
to get to the rim. And the Timberwolves haven't been able to do that. Jake Layman's really good at that. So,
and he's good in transition as well. And that's now that's the only time they look good. They look good in that first half against the Clippers, because when they're playing good defense and they're taking the ball off the rim rather than out of the basket, you know, like when they can get a rebound and go, that's when they look good, because they can attack like a broken floor kind of defense. When the other team's scoring and they have to play half-court basketball every possession, that's when it starts to bog down. Even last night when they had that kind of little mini run where Beasley hit a couple of threes and then Ant hit a three out of the pick and roll, that was all off. They all came off missed shots from LA. And that's fine. It's awesome that if you play in good defense, you can convert that to offense, because that'll lead to 20-point leads. But as we've seen, teams hit shots. Like Orlando will start hitting shots. LA will start hitting shots. Every team will start hitting shots. And if you can't score in the half court when those teams are hitting shots, then those 15, 20-point leads that you build by playing fast and quick and punishing teams for their missed shots, they're going to evaporate really quickly. And yeah, it still boggles my mind that they've been so bad in the half court offensively. It makes more sense now that we watch it, because like, there is no one who can put pressure on the rim. And that is a massive, massive problem. That's the biggest problem on the team. It's not rebounding. It's not defensive personnel. It's the fact that no one can score at the rim. And that's another reason why I like Towns getting out, because if he can play more as a driver, you at least add him to the mix of guys who can get to the rim. At least you have two.
I think Cat is a very good driver too. I think he's like the only other, I mean, Jalen Noel can put a little bit of pressure on the rim, I think too, but you're not going to rely on Jalen Noel for that. But I think getting Cat out there, he hits a couple threes, Zubac up playing up on him,
yeah,
drive right past him.
And he can drive past smaller guys too. Like if you want to put Nick Batum on him, like
he's got long strides
and he's bigger and he's
fast in a straight line.
Yeah.
He's fast in a straight, he's not like super quick, but I'd say he's fast in a straight line. So I think that would be really important. I think it's really interesting that we talked about all the problems with this roster coming into the season. We don't have a defending power forward. We don't have a power forward that can hit threes. We don't have pretty much a power forward. That was like all that was talked about. But nobody ever talked about the rim pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever mentioned the rim pressure because it didn't really come to anybody's mind. But hearing Anthony Edwards quotes, you know, post game, and I don't think he's really throwing his teammates under the bus. I think he's more so throwing a shot at the roster construction, yeah, that there's nobody else to drive the lane. But it's funny to me that that was not a concern. And we've seen it come up as like a huge, huge, huge concern. And I'm sure one way to combat that is to have, you know, a power forward that can shoot, because that would help just the overall offensive flow in general. But I think they need to find somebody. It's been encouraging to see Torian Prince put a little bit of pressure on the rim. He was doing that on Friday night. He had a couple nice drives the last couple games, but you're not taking Torian Prince super seriously when he's doing that, you know. Yeah. And J-Mac can get into the lane, but he's only like 5'11", so there's only so much pressure he can put in the rim. He's not going to, I mean, he has, but he's probably not going to sky over and dunk on someone.
Yeah.
Like he dunked on Clint Capella, but like,
and he seems he's not going to be doing that. A little bit of that fairy dust that he had, you know, finishing around the rim, that it seemed more like an outlier in that first stretch of games, because he's been pretty bad the last two seasons actually finishing.
Sure.
And teams don't guard him from three. Like they'll let him drive because they'll take their chances defending the rim against a dude who's 5'10".
Yeah, for sure. It's just insane that that was something that the Timberwolves didn't seem to lack. And now all of a sudden it's like a big thing that they're missing. One wrinkle we saw that changed from the first LA game to the second LA game was Torian Prince as the fifth starter. It actually worked really well to start the game, but I think when that came back in the second half, it didn't quite go as good. What are your thoughts on that? And like, had you ever thought of that maybe being that option? And what do you think going forward? Should they stick with one guy? Should they kind of matchup base it? Should they, and who should that guy be if you think that it should be one guy moving forward?
Yeah, I did think they might go with it after that first Clippers game, just because we saw how LA guarded Cat and how they kind of left JO or Vando alone, or at least semi alone, so that they could switch off and have Zubats as a backside rim protector rather than the guy who's facing Towns one on one. I don't know. It's so hard to say which one you like and which one you don't like in terms of the power forward position, because none of them are very good options. I think I'm still team Vanderbilt because I like that he can rebound. I like that he can guard fours and big wings. I thought he did a brilliant job on Paul George both games when he was out there, and sometimes that matters more than the offense. But then when you're in such a slump offensively, it's hard to kind of, like, they're all one-way players, kind of. And I know Prince can do a little bit of both, but, like, all of them take away something from either side of the ball. Like, you start Prince, you don't get rebounding. You start Vanderbilt, you have the offensive lane is pretty clogged because he's going to hang out in the dunker spot, and he, no matter what he says on Twitter, cannot shoot threes. And then you start J.O., who can't shoot threes or really rebound, but he's an elite defender and can.
He's an okay rebounder.
Yeah,
for his size.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's just too small.
6'4", and he's more of a good offensive rebounder.
Effective height of like 6'8", though. Let's put that out there.
But JO can guard the best perimeter player. Like JO can guard anyone, maybe 1 through 4, as long as they're not like a really big four. So
yeah,
it's. I think I'm Vanderbilt because I like that he's bigger. I like that he rebounds. If in my perfect world, you are playing Cat further away from the basket, you have Vanderbilt in there still to get the occasional offensive rebound when Cat's probably going to lose a few offensive rebounds if he's not kind of around that post area. And I think Vanderbilt is a more versatile defender probably than Okogie just because he's taller and he can also protect the rim a little bit better. So I think Vanderbilt, Prince needs to hit shots. Like if Prince isn't hitting shots, he's just not an option. I'd probably say Vanderbilt and then Okogie, then Prince would be my preference, but it really is matchup based. Who are they playing next? Memphis. I'd probably start Vanderbilt against Memphis.
For Jaren.
Yeah. And you know, you just go like that. I think that's the best. What they're doing right now is the best option of a bad bunch of options is just, you know, roll out who makes more sense on any given night.
And I think with those three, it seems like all of them would be very useful backups, but none of them are like a fantastic, like starting option. But this is something that I guess I want to ask you about. What if that fifth starter isn't a power forward and it's someone like Malik Beasley, who has really come back to nearly how good he was last season. And for a team that's been struggling on offense and not really struggling on defense, what's the cost of doing something like that? If you can get, and to be honest with you, I'm not going to say he's been great, but Malik Beasley really has been a lot better defensively this season.
Yes.
My eye test wise, I don't know what the numbers say, but and just watching him play,
I think he seems
very
season,
intentional.
I think 8 games into the season, you just trust the eye test over any sort of numbers. Yeah, exactly. Everything's
right.
So
and that's why I didn't even look him up.
Yeah.
But I think he's looked pretty good defensively. Mm-hmm. Not that like, and granted he's been, you know, he's been playing defense a lot more against like second units than he has against first units, but I just think like he's been a lot more intentional of not overplaying defensively and just kind of making sure he's in his spots doing what he's supposed to be doing rather than like going for steals, going for blocks. I don't love that option. I'm going to put that out there. I think they need to keep Jaden at the three, especially with his fouling problems. I think you want to keep him where he's kind of at, but I don't think it's, I can't say anybody would be dumb for thinking about putting Malik Beasley in the lineup, especially with D'Lo being out, but D'Lo supposedly according to Ant is going to be back Monday.
Dr. Ant.
We'll see if he actually is, but yeah. So I just, what are your thoughts about Beasley being that fifth guy?
I think it's as good of an option as any. Normally I wouldn't, I definitely didn't advocate it throughout the whole off season. Normally I wouldn't advocate for it, but I also had no expectation that the offense would be this bad. And if the offense is this bad, throw Malik Beasley out there. Like you said, he's slowly coming back to what he was. He's clearly still the most dependable and versatile shooter on the team outside of Towns, and he's going to be able to get up more threes than Towns on any given night because he can run off screens and he's always active looking for the ball, which is something that is really valuable right now in a team that seems to be just stood in the mud a lot offensively. Like I said earlier, I think Finch runs really good screening actions for Beasley, which makes me excited at least to watch. gives me content to write about, but it is helpful on a team that, yeah, it seems so just bogged down in the half court. At least you can get Beasley running off threes. I think he's done a really good job of making the right decisions this season. Even when the shots weren't going in, I don't think he was really forcing them. I think if he came off a pin down or a double pin down and the defense and kind of cheated their way through and got there, that he would pass back to the open man, or he would take two dribbles into the free throw line and try and hit someone in the corner. Like you said, I think he's been really good defensively for him. Just disciplined to the scheme, still has his foibles kind of running to the corners and closing out really poorly, really bad at closeouts, Beasley, but he's got more protection now on the backside when he does kind of miss a closeout, but he's missing less assignments. He's clearly knows the defensive scheme from his time in Denver, which I think helps. The more I think about it right now and kind of talk myself into it, maybe it's just the idea, like, they're playing terribly. I think maybe you just try it. It's the one thing they haven't tried yet. So,
yeah.
And McDaniels is picking up four fouls a game. So, like, is it possible for him to foul out quicker as a four than he did in the 13 minutes the other night? Like, the rebounding is an issue, a pretty big issue in that. And I think that's why Finch doesn't do it. Because McDaniels needs to rebound his position better when he's a three. And if you put him as the four and he's getting two rebounds in a game, you might just get killed in a different way, in a way like the Pelicans killed them in that third game. So I don't know, man. It's depressing to talk about because all of them lead back to the avenue where it's kind of like you could get killed this way. But you could get killed any of the ways, and maybe Finch just needs to try the Beasley way, and that might be, you know, successful for a game or two, and then you readjust and you see where you're at from there.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's something that's got to be. I think that whether he starts or not, I think Beasley has to play 30 minutes a game. I don't want to see him knocked down to the low to mid 20s just because the offense is. We're going to need that offense. And what he's been able to show us defensively is like, okay, this guy can actually, you know, not hurt us as much on that side of the ball. Yeah. And his offense can really outweigh his defense. Cause that was kind of the thing with Malik for a while. It's like his defense is so bad. Is his offense even outweighing how bad he's been on defense? And it's been better to the point where it's like, if he's playing like he has been the past couple games that he's been, you know, back to his old self. He's playing like his old self offensively, maybe not even to the level of last season, but like 85% of last season offensively, but he can keep this defensive effort up. Then I think you're sitting pretty good with where Beasley is at, even if he's not starting. I just think that it's been pretty good.
And teams respect him from deep. Like team.
Yeah, for sure.
He has 3-point gravity, which is different to being, you know, like a floor spacer is different to being a guy who can shoot threes. Like Jaden McDaniels is not a floor spacer because teams.
Patrick Beverley, I think, is the best idea of like if like being able to shoot threes, where like your floor spacer is Malik Beasley. Yeah, because floor spacing is not just ability; it's gravity like attention that you're garnering from the defense. Yeah, and Beasley has that.
D'Lo and Kat are the only ones that have it. And Ant still has it.
Ant does.
He has that.
Like, because his drive.
Yeah, yes. He has that kind of aura about him. But teams don't want him to drive, so they're going to let him shoot the three. And he's too willing to accept that challenge to shoot the three and prove that, you know, they're stupid for leaving him open. I think that's a bit of the problem with Ant, is he wants to be like, you know, if you don't think I can shoot threes, I'll prove to you that I can shoot threes, which...
Yeah.
Just go past them. Like you can still get to the rim and it doesn't like, then they will come out on you. If you get into the rim, then they'll start to play you more aggressively. And then you can shoot more threes kind of, you know, in the flow of the offense as a catch and shoot guy rather than a pull up threat. But like Ant just has too much pressure on him without D'Lo and too much pressure on him when Kat's in the post and he has to be the only offensive kind of totem pole. On the perimeter, it's too much. The dude hasn't even played a full NBA season, and credit to him that he gets treated that way because he's really damn good. But like we forget, I think sometimes that all of a sudden he's like, if he's not Donovan Mitchell, the team can't win. And he's not that he's virtually still a rookie, and it's a tough position for him to be in where the team kind of can't win unless he dominates.
For sure. So I think that's a good segue into what I want to talk about next with Ant. Since D'Lo's been out the past two games, that's kind of changed what Finch has done with his rotations, and it's gone to where Anthony Edwards has been the first sub out. And to be honest with you, I want to see that going forward. I want Ant to be the first sub out. I want D'Lo to stay on the floor with Cat for a while. And I think the biggest reason, I don't know if I've really heard anybody talk about this, but the biggest reason I can see, or I would want it to happen, is I want Ant to try to increase his driving against second units when maybe the rim protector is not as good. I mean, some teams have a better rim protector as their backup than their starter. That's just roster construction. But like against a worse center, a worse, theoretically worse defense as a second unit, I want to see Ant thrive going to the rim against those players. You know, I would rather have seen him going to the rim against Isaiah Hartenstein than against Zubac. And same thing is like when you play against a team, trying to think of a team off the top of my head, but like, yeah, if you're going up against like Milwaukee, I'd rather see Ant going driving on like Bobby Portis than onto Brooke Lopez at the rim or whoever is in that backup center spot. I think it's been really good to see Ant as that first sub out. I think it'll be even better if D'Lo's back and D'Lo's in that main, you know, that first unit still with Cat on the floor. I think that would be, I like that going forward. And you've been nodding your head, so I feel like you like the idea of Ant being the first sub out too. What are your thoughts?
Why do you like that? I think if my memory serves me correctly, both Ant's best stretches in both of these last two games have been in that early second quarter, late first quarter, when he's been able to play with Nas and McLaughlin. And I think the reason for that is because, first of all, there's any hesitancy with Ant that he's not the number one guy out there. It's just kind of the mentality that he has. But there's absolutely no question that when he's out there with the bench guys that he needs to score and that he needs to do it efficiently and that he doesn't have, I still think he's a little bit undecided sometimes about whether he should be passing to Cat or passing to D'Lo or whether he should just be doing it all himself. With the second unit, there's no questions there. He's got to do it himself. Nas Reid doesn't post up. Not a lot. He does post up. He's actually really good in the post, but they're not like hammering post up as the first option in the set. Normally, Nas kind of, you know, runs a pick and pop. If he gets the ball back, he'll flow into a dribble handoff, and then he'll kind of pivot around and go into the post. That leaves 10, 12, 14 seconds where there's no one guarding the rim. Just teams do guard Nas. He's definitely got some gravity just as a scorer. And that leads to Anthony Edwards having more space to drive. He should have, I know I'm bringing it back to this every time, but he should have more space to drive in the starting lineup if Cat wasn't sitting in the post all game. And then I just think that the overall flow of things with him just as the lead guy work well with the bench, because the bench kind of predicates itself on defense and ball movement. There's no real go-to guy. The other guy normally is Beasley, and Beasley would still probably check in for Ant. So it's all about just ball movement, and the ball finds the energy. And I think Ant has energy when he's with that second unit. And they play good defense and they get out in transition. So I think most of the transition highlights that we've seen with Anthony Edwards the last few games have all been with that second unit. You know, Nas gets a stop or J-Mac gets a little poke away or Torian Prince comes in and grabs a rebound. And then all of a sudden they're off to the races and Ant can finish. So I completely agree. And more so I agree because I really like Cat and D'Lo together. I don't love the idea of them splitting their minutes or staggering their minutes. I think Cat does a lot of the things that I've been preaching for him to do when D'Lo is on the floor. He's a much better pick and roll threat when D'Lo is on the floor, gets more pick and pop opportunities. D'Lo is very, very aware of Towns when he's on the court, which is a little bit of a worry for mine at the start when they were getting used to each other. But I think D'Lo really looks for Cat. And so, yeah, as much as I like Ant with the second unit, I think more so I like D'Lo with the first unit and with Towns and get them to play the first 12 and then, you know, go from there.
Yeah. And that's what I kind of, another reason I liked it too, was keeping Cat and D'Lo together at the same time. because I think that pick and pop combination is really good. Mm-hmm. I think they just work well with each other.
He's just a fraction of a second quicker on the pick and pop passes than Ant is, or than Patrick Beverley is. And that fraction of a second means a lot when you're a guy who doesn't need that much space to shoot.
There's so many times where I'm watching and I'm like, Cat should have the ball already. Mm-hmm. He's at the top of the key wide open. He should have the ball already.
And he needs to shoot as well. It's on him as well. Like,
he does.
Like, if you get the ball, I hate when he gets the ball and kind of you can tell his first option is to survey the court for a cutter or for someone to come back and get that dribble handoff off him, like a little kind of pitch and return. Just shoot it, man. Like, this team needs him to just shoot. If that means he shoots 38% from three or 37% from three, you know, and not 44, like, that's worth it, because that's what, you know, Damian Lillard shoots 37% from three. Like, Jason Tate, you know, they probably shoot, they fluctuated between 40 and 38. But, like, when you shoot 10, 12 threes a game, you're going to inherently shoot a lower percentage. But the overall effectiveness of someone hitting, you know, four threes a game is massive.
I went and looked at some Anthony Edwards numbers here by quarter, because we're talking about subbing him out first, and his best. So I filtered it by like per 36 minutes just to get like an even playing field for each quarter. He averages 28.8 points in second quarters, which is by far his best, 28.8 per 36.
Oh yeah. In second quarters. For a second, I was like, that doesn't make sense.
No, yes, per 36. Yes, yes. So, obviously it's his best.
What are we looking at? It's his field goal percentage wise and whatnot.
So second quarter field goal percentage, he's shooting 36.4% from three on 11 attempts. So like, that's actually like, I don't want to, and obviously this is per 36. So
that's still high
36%. 36% is good. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for someone like Ant, if he's like a 36, 37% shooter, you're totally fine with that. He's shooting 44%. Overall from the field, it doesn't show me 2%.
If he shot that for the entire season, he would be an all-star.
Right, because right now he's shooting from the field, he's shooting 40% this year, you know, and 30% from three. But like I said, 28.8 points in that 36 per 36 minutes, and he's a plus nine during that time. So that's a lot of that's, you know, he'd come in early when Cat's not there, probably play the first 6 minutes, because usually Cat plays the whole first. So he's probably playing about 6 minutes without Cat there. And then his second best quarter, well, it gets a little dicier. The fourth quarter, he shoots really effectively from three, 41%, but he's only scoring, 18 points per 36 minutes.
That's when things have been bogging down in the fourth. That's when the Wolves have really found it hard to score.
And these are only eight, you know, we're eight games in the season. Yeah. So there's tons of caveats with this, but I think it's pretty clear that second quarters has probably been his best, you know, best quarter. And I think it feels that way when we're watching too. Last year was a lot of like fourth quarters. Like, do you remember how he would take over games in the fourth quarter? He hasn't really done that as much.
And I don't think either of us are saying that he's better without Towns on the floor, but for those minutes where Towns has to be off the floor, he's the best option out of D'Lo and Ant.
Yes. And in the last two games, when he for sure has been the first sub out, in the second quarters, he's averaging 33.6 points per 36 minutes. So really good. He also is shooting 54% from the field while shooting 20% from three in second quarters. So that's, again, two games, but like going up against second units, getting to the rim more. If he's shooting 20% from three, that means from two, he's shooting like ridiculously high.
Because he started off the season pretty dicey from the rim. Not only not getting there enough, but he wasn't hitting as many shots. But the last few games, outside of the Orlando game, probably like the last five games, he's been back to like, if you take away that Orlando game, I'd say he'd be, you know, 65-70% from the rim, which is makes it all the more frustrating that he's shooting 10 threes a game. Like, I don't know if this was last night, I checked it the night before, so these stats might be out of date, but he was shooting the fourth most threes in the league. And that's...
I can look it up real quick.
And there's other guys up there who are shooting really poorly. Like Jordan Clarkson was up there and he was shooting like low 20s. But like these are guys who are notable shooters.
It's number one. Number one, Steph. He's shooting 13. He should be shooting 20, but regardless, he's shooting 13. Buddy Hield shooting 10.7. He's so second.
Check that.
Donovan Mitchell. And Buddy's shooting like 42%.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell is shooting 10 per game. He's only shooting 33%. And then Ant's fourth with 9.6. He's at 29.9%. Jordan Clarkson's sixth, 22%.
Yeah.
Damian Lillard's 21% and seventh. Well, so like,
it's a good example of why shooting numbers 8 games into the season don't matter that much, because Damian Lillard is shooting 21% from three. Like, and Jordan Clarkson's shooting 22%, who's a very good shooter as well. Like, but for sure. Anthony Edwards doesn't have the cachet that those guys do as like multi-year good shooters. Anthony Edwards has not had a single good year of shooting. So
yeah,
like as but much this as I season... want him shooting threes, and I do think he's a good shooter. I think he's a shooter in a little bit in the way that like Luka is, how Luka always shoots a poor percentage from three. But the fact that he's taking so many pull-ups really does help.
Yeah,
you know, the offense, and he's like, his shot quality isn't good, but those shots, like, people don't make those shots at 40% clips.
And I don't think anybody's wanting
is a good, you know, a good number for pull up threes. So it's a different ball game, but there needs to be a better balance.
And I think it should be 6 or 7 threes compared to 9 or 10 threes game. I still want him taking 6. You do have to keep the defense honest.
I want good Kat news taking is, 10. I'm going to keep hammering at this whole podcast. I want Kat
more than 10.
Kat
12.
Should be there with Steph Curry. And I know he's not Steph Curry, but like in this offense, a Kat 3 is the most valuable shot that you can get. And outside of an Anthony Edwards like, drive.
Kat is shooting like 47% from three this year so far, which again, 8 games, but like he's going to stick above 40 for sure. Or not for sure, but like probably
it.
39 would be the worst, right? But so far this season, I'm just going to go through how Ant's been shooting at different places in the floor. Within 3 feet, he's shooting 62%, which is
that's
about the same. It's about the same he shot last year.
That's bonkers. At like 50 throughout the first like 3 or 4 games. Like his last 4 games must have been ridiculously high.
Yeah, and this is on basketball reference, so it's a lot harder to filter this. But and then 3 to 10 feet, he's at 26%. That's never been his spot. He doesn't have the touch for floaters.
He needs to find a floater.
He needs to find it. Yeah. 10 to 16 feet, he's actually shooting 41%.
I felt like the last few games he's been 10%, shooting well in the mid-range. Which
only
10%
of his shots come from that, from 10 to 16 feet, but still like pretty solid. And then 16 feet, you know, long mid-range, he's actually shooting 37.5%, which is way better than last year. But again, only like 5% of his shots are coming from there. And then obviously from three, he's only shooting 30%. The crazy thing is he hasn't been getting calls. He's taking a lot of contact when he gets to the rim and he's still shooting, you know, 62%, which is really good.
I think that really disparages him when he doesn't get calls. I think he gets annoyed that he doesn't get a call, and then he just thinks, well, I'm just going to shoot a three then. Like, and that's not the greatest mentality. And I think it's something he'll grow out of. Again, he's 20 years old and he's in the nicest way possible. Like, he's an immature 20, you know, like he's still so fresh to like learning how to be the guy on an NBA basketball team that's like actually trying to win. It'd be different if they tore this down and you know, things went horribly this season and they traded Kat, like then it would be fine for Edwards to do whatever he wanted. But it's not as beneficial as really having a team that is relying on you to win games. Like, you know, Cade Cunningham can miss his first 21 shots of the season and no one cares. But Anthony Edwards, like, if he doesn't play well, the team doesn't win. And if the team doesn't win, the pressure piles onto them. And I do think that's a good thing, because I want these guys to grow up in at least a somewhat, like, even if it's not a winning environment, at least an environment that expects you to win, because there was just so many seasons where Kat wasn't even expected to win. And I think in some ways you kind of see the fruits of that labor now.
Yeah. So I think we're in agreement. Ant needs to be the first sub going forward.
Yeah, we went on a tangent there, but I think that's, we agree on that.
Yeah, back to that point, I think that's going to be a good thing. And it'll be fun to track if Finch noticed that too. And if he's going to continue to do that. Yeah, I'm excited to see
what he does when D'Lo's back with the rotations.
All right, so next thing I want to do, I posted on Twitter after last night's game, Friday night's game. I said, all right, Wolves fans, what are your biggest questions, hot takes, et cetera, for the Wolves? I said I'd pick a few to count, to, you know, we could talk about here in the pod.
Oh, no.
A couple more funny. Wolves are cursed and will be bad for eternity, forever breaking my heart. I agree with that one. But Josh Pauly asked, does this bad start to the season make you want Ben Simmons more or less? And I don't want to go on like a huge topic, but I'm going to, let's do a quick bullet points. I say more too, because he pressures the rim.
Mm-hmm.
He makes your defense even better. He answers that power, that rebounding situation, the big body power forward, and he can play make. So in a vacuum, I want him more than I did before the season started. If you ask me after the first few games, maybe my answer wouldn't be the same thing. My answer
was don't even pick up the phone after three games. But now I'm like, call.
Yeah. Like I said, the rim pressure is one of the biggest reasons. And then the defense and the rebounding is kind of that. So I feel like there's not a lot else to add to that.
I still just want to see Ant and Ben Simmons in transition just one time. Like,
that would be,
if that's a nutty pairing in transition offensively.
Yeah. Yeah. I can just envision the Ben Simmons drop pass between his legs backwards to Ant. And it's just beautiful in my mind. But
the problem is that these eight games have made it less likely that they can get Ben Simmons.
Especially because their main trade pieces haven't been playing
their
well.
Assets are declining by the game. So it's still, it always did to me, but it seems even more like a pipe dream now than it was. Yeah.
Next one. I don't even know how to say this name, so I'm not going to, but it says, would the Wolves better keep build? Okay, I'm just going to paraphrase this. Basically, is it better to keep building and being patient with this team, build around Ant, or trade Ant now to win on purpose? And then they go on to say, I'll read this one verbatim. Seems pretty obvious that Edwards, as good as he is, doesn't fit well around Kat and D'Lo. And that's the last sentence, I think, is one of the most idiotic things I've probably read so far.
I wasn't going to say it, but I'm happy you did.
Well, I think, if anything, Kat and D'Lo need that rim pressure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So to say Ant doesn't fit around those two, they doesn't make sense in my mind.
They don't fit around Ant more than he doesn't fit around them, I think. And that's not right. I think
it's more so on D'Lo than it is on Kat. I think Kat and Ant fit really well together. I think they need a point guard, maybe. And I still think they can be solid with D'Angelo Russell. I'm actually still pretty high on him, even though he's had a slow start.
I am too, even though people on Twitter think I hate him, but I do like
him. Well, you did say he's not 10 of his team.
I think there's a very good argument that he's not, but I do like him. I think that, you know, like, I want him to be good, but I think the things, and that the reason, it's for the reasons we spoke about, is that I question whether he's tenable on the team because they really need a guy who can put pressure on the rim. And usually that is point guards, like, you know, guys who can get into the teeth of the defense out of pick and roll. And D'Lo's not that. He's going to start hitting shots again, and I'm sure it'll look a lot better. But when he's not, it's, you know, I question it a little bit.
Yeah. And the only other hope, I think, is like, you hope Jaden gets an off the dribble game where he can pressure the rim. And he's only, you know, 21 years old too. Yeah. So maybe that does come, but that's going to take a while. That's not going to be an overnight transition that I don't even know if he'll ever get to that point. So, but I would say Edwards fits really well.
I think if you were tearing it down, because
he's the person you tear it down around. I think, And at this point, this juncture, Kat's obviously the best player on this team. He's the most consistent player on this team. And Edwards might never get to that level. But when you take into consideration all the factors of contract, team control, charisma, fan interest.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's the guy it is. I don't want to think about it.
You know
but, like,
what
that's
would be torn down is Mayo Clinic target center if target they traded Anthony Edwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's still, we're still a couple of steps away, but I think if we're hurtling towards, you know, any sort of dramatic change, it'll be that Cat probably gets traded. And I don't want to see that happen. I love Cat. I think that he can work as a first or second option on a good team. But like, yeah, like you said, considering contracts, which is such a massive, like if you have a star on a rookie contract, you just don't trade him. It's pretty simple. If you have a star that's heading into his final season soon and hasn't made any, like he hasn't signed an extension, we don't know whether, I don't think he has an extension on the table yet, obviously, but
I think it's after this season.
And we don't know whether he wants to leave or stay.
2 years.
But
yeah,
like he's the one that, you know, so far hasn't worked, even though he's been very good. And a lot of that not working has been not on him at all. But yeah, if you're trading any of those guys, it would probably be Cat as well, because you would get a monstrous return. And now
your return would be insane.
And now you're rebuilding around Ant plus your return plus another high pick, that, you know, probably two high picks, one from Minnesota and one from another team. So I don't want that to happen. I'm always the guy sticking up for people who say just trade Cat. You know, I don't think that's a good idea. Too. But if we were picking sides, I would probably pick that one.
I'm right there with you. The next one is that Leandro Bolmaro will have a Jaden McDaniels level rookie season by the end of it. Not be trusted at all as a rookie. Injuries and blowouts force him to play, and his spark will force him into the actual rotation over the one-dimensional guys. I think I can't agree with this one, as high as I've been on him. He just kind of does look out of place in the minutes that he's been on the court.
I'm with that. I don't think he's going to have a Jaden McDaniels breakout, but like I tweeted this just before we got on air, so you might not have seen it, but
I didn't.
Like
I need to look.
I am a fan, at least if this season keeps barreling towards complete and utter disaster, I'm a fan of getting him some minutes, because he does put pressure on the rim. He can at least puncture the paint and puncture the first line of the defense, and he makes a really good plays if he can get 2 feet in the paint. He can't shoot. I think he's a better shooter than people give him credit for, because he's just like got this awful shot, you know, motion. But like, you know, he shot well in Spain last season. He's very, very small sample size, shot well in the G League in the 1.5 games or whatever. And I just think, I think he does things that this team could need. I would not be having him in the rotation right now, and I'm Bolmaro stan, but I don't know if it is my bias just talking, but I do think that there is a case that if this season goes poorly, that he could at least start to get rotation minutes, and I think he's going to become a good player. So I'm kind of on board with that question or that hot take, but I wouldn't be thrusting him into the lineup.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think he can put pressure on the rim? Like, not to the level of like Ant or anything, but I think even with like his passing ability and his athleticism, do you think he could? I mean, to be completely honest, I haven't watched that much of his film, just because it's kind of hard to get your hands on it.
Just saying this, because I was just looking at the, because obviously when we're talking, the Iowa Wolves just finished their game. He had 19, 8-8 today. 8 of 10 from the field, 2 of 4 from three, 6 turnovers as well, 2 steals. Just putting that out there, plus 23 on the game. So I do. It's tough, because I think that he's slithery. I don't think he finishes very well at the rim. I don't think he finished very well at the rim in Spain. So I don't expect him to be finishing very well in the NBA. But I think it's the decisions he makes when he gets past. I think he can. He's really manipulative in the pick and roll, in terms of kind of setting guys up to be screened off. And that means he can at least get past the point of attack. And I think when he gets past the point of attack, he makes really good plays. And that does rely on guys to be cutting better and Towns to be a role threat. I think he'd be awesome with Naz Reid, who's just such good roller.
That would be fantastic.
I think he's better than Jordan McLaughlin. Like, and I'm a pretty kind of, I'm pretty high on what J-Mac does for the team. He hasn't been playing very well lately, but in general, I think J-Mac is a very good backup point guard. But I think Bolmaro has height, a bit more athleticism, a truly, I think, underrated in kind of, not the fan base, but more just like in what we think of his potential, like a truly underrated sense for an amazing, amazing pass. Like, he has got awesome vision. I think even last night, he played for like 2 minutes. He made an awesome pass immediately to, I think, Vando, who fumbled it, unsurprisingly. But I do think that he's a point guard, and I think he's a big playmaker who can puncture the paint and make plays for others and still finish at the rim occasionally. So, like, do I want him playing 20 minutes a night? Definitely not. But do I think that he can at least be a guy who can put a little bit of pressure on the rim via others, if that makes sense? Like, put pressure on the rim by getting guys in a position to score at the rim. I think he does that almost as well as anyone on the team already. So that's kind of my take on Bolmaro and whether he could be, a rim pressure guy. I think he's a rim pressure guy for others, not really himself.
Okay. Yeah, and like I said, I just haven't watched a ton of him, and so I didn't really know, what to expect in that regard. But I think you kind of laid out pretty good there. It's cool to see that he's playing well in the G League. Of course, the G League.
I didn't expect him to be this good in the G League. So I think he's a little bit more advanced. Like you said, it's very different, to NBA basketball. Right. But I'm surprised that he's playing that well. I'm surprised he's scoring that well. He didn't even score that well in the minutes he got in Spain, which Spain is probably a better league, honestly, than the G League. Like,
yeah, probably.
But I think 220. He got 19 today, but 220-point games pretty much in his first two games, making plays for others, hitting threes and shooting really well from the field. So I think the team would be pretty happy with that experiment so far. Nathan Knight dominated as well today. I don't know what he had. I can probably get it out. He had 31 and 13. So good to get some minutes into those guys. Hit four,
31
hit four
and 13?
Threes as well. He hit 40, four threes as well.
Free Nathan Knight. Hashtag free Nathan Knight. Jeez. Oh, man. I think that would be like an underrated thing, is if Nathan Knight could come and be like a contributor at the NBA level.
Yeah.
I mean, he played for a good Hawks team last season,
play the four at all, because it seems like right now we're just cycling through options at the four, and he can score. He can obviously shoot a little bit from deep, at least enough to make defenses think about respecting him, and he can rebound as well. And he's big, strong dude. So for whatever reason, they don't seem to be able to think that he is like on that level of like Nas,
He's like, okay, so he's like the break glass in case of emergency guy, but like Jaden McDaniels was the break glass in case of emergency. And that turned out pretty well. I'm not saying that's like the arc for Nathan Knight, but
we're getting close to the emergency. Maybe that glass needs to be broken.
The thing with Knight, is Knight seems like a star player type, like guy. Like he just needs the ball, and like that's not the type of guy he could be on the Wolves. So it'd be like
he wants to be the guy.
How could he tone that into being like a solid role player? Players do that all the time. You see really good, highly touted college players go from being a star player to just a quality role player.
He might need something to happen to, Nas or Kat, so he can get a 3 or 4 game stretch where he plays like Vanderbilt did last season, where it's kind of like we've got no other options but to play Vanderbilt or to play McDaniels, and they get 4 or 5 games and it's like, all right, well, like we're not good enough to tell these guys they can't play anymore. So maybe these things happen naturally throughout the season where, Vanderbilt or McDaniels or Towns or Nas are going to miss time through something probably. So,
And the one thing I do like about what he could bring to the court that we don't have is that he can put pressure on the rim as like the role threat.
Yeah.
Nas is his own version of role threat pressure, but Nathan Knight can sky and like get a lob and dunk it. I mean, he's not like elite at that, but like he's the closest thing the Wolves have to like a lob threat. So
I wonder how I'd like to see how
I would just be really interested to see how it would look next to Cat.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. I wonder how much him and Bomaro kind of synergize today in the pick and roll, because
I'd love to go back and watch that, but I also don't know if I need to go back and watch that. Or how I could go back and watch that.
Yeah, we're sickos. If we're going back to watch an Iowa Wolves
G League film.
Yeah, we're sickos. Second game of the season. Yeah.
Boy. do you have any like other big takeaways? I guess like we touched on a lot. We didn't touch on D'Lo a lot. But there's not a lot to say. He's been slow. We think he'll be better.
Yeah.
Like we'll see what he looks like.
I mean, if he's good. Like he's a good player. Like he's not, he's got his issues and they're well documented. And I think that they do hold the team back when he's really like kind of stuck on them, but he's not going to shoot 25% from three or 35% from the field for the season. Like you don't go. Right. And I thought he was awesome down the stretch last season. So I assume he'll be back and he might take a few games to kind of ramp back into things. But I imagine at one point, D'Lo's going to start hitting, you know, he's going to go through a stretch where he scores 25 points a game and shoots 45% from three.
And he looked good in the Milwaukee game. Yeah. He's only played one game since then. Actually, no, he played
half a game.
One and a half game.
Yeah, oh, one and a half.
No,
yeah.
One and a half games since then.
The Denver game as well.
Yeah. And so I guess, like, I don't know. To be fair, the team has looked better with D'Lo.
Much better. I
mean, probably worse competition. Probably worse competition.
Since I made that tweet, I've been getting people in everything I tweet mentioning that their team looked better with D'Lo. So I agree. If you are listening to this, people, I do agree. I do like D'Lo. And I can't wait for him to be back. And it seems like the team can't wait for him to be back, which is important as well. So,
yeah, for sure. And he's already got one dunk this season, which is
nuts.
The same amount that he had last season. His only dunk last season was
Boston.
That crazy dunk on Luke Kornet in the Boston game.
I was drunk watching that, and I thought
I was covering that game. That was the first game I ever covered, and I'm just sitting there.
Was it like a matinee game? Because I was up late.
Yeah, it was the second to last game of the season.
Yeah, I was.
It was the second to last game of the season. And I'm the first game I've ever been media at, right? And like, obviously, if you sit on media, you're not a fan.
They played horribly.
Yeah, they didn't play very well. But you're not a fan at, you know, as media. You got to be professional, you know, no cheering, whatever. I don't know how to contain my. I think we all just kind of looked around and we're just like, and we're up in like the suite level and like we're all spaced out, but we're just like, what just happened? Like, that's the most athletic I've ever seen D'Angelo Russell look. But yeah, I just think it was cool to see him dunk once this season.
Yeah.
But
well, I think that's, I think when he dunks, that's almost him saying like, I feel good. Like that's what it felt like good. Last season.
What game was it in this year?
I literally watched, because I've been watching clips of Cat shots and Cat assists, and I literally watched it this morning. It might have been Milwaukee or Denver, maybe even.
I don't think it was Denver, because I think I was watching on TV and I was at the Denver game. It was the Milwaukee game, the game that he played good.
Yeah.
No. Wait, maybe not.
Or maybe Pelicans second
maybe
game.
Not. Gosh, I can't remember.
It's
now.
One of the games. It's for sure.
Regardless,
Regardless,
he dunked.
Yeah, and
and like that was a nice dunk too.
Yeah,
like that was actually a pretty
like
solid
I said,
dunk too.
I think it's him saying like, you know, my body feels good, and when his body feels good, he seems to play better. And unfortunate that, you know, he turns his ankle. It seems like he probably avoided it being a bad one. Like if that's those high ankle sprains can kind of really derail someone's season for 3 or 4 weeks. So if he misses two or three games, I think we can probably count ourselves pretty lucky that that's all it was.
Yeah. And I don't think, like you're saying, I don't know if it was really like if he'll be back for this Monday game or not. Anthony Edwards kind of made it seem like he was, but again, Anthony Edwards is not the, you know, he's not the doctor. He's not the one making that decision, but he is like, you know, he probably wouldn't have said that if Devo was going to be out for like a long time, you know, if there wasn't optimism that he would be back like super soon. So I don't know. I just think he's going to be back, I would guess, by the end of this week. I mean, that's no inside information other than my source of Anthony Edwards, but it seems like D'Lo will come back soon and hopefully help this team, because I do think, as bad as he's been, it's just been better to have him like on the court than off of it.
And he can definitely make, even if he's not a rim pressure guy, he can still make plays as a guy who can do stuff off the catch, which is just as important on a team that doesn't really have much of that either. It's kind of just shoot a three or bust at the moment. So at least you get D'Lo to add a little bit more, you know, he can at least get into the mid range and hit a shot, which no one else seems to be doing either. Like, he just adds a little bit more juice to the offense, and clearly they need it.
Yeah. And I'm trying to figure out which game this was in, cause I can't get over it. But I think that probably covers all of our bases. I mean, we didn't talk about everybody, not everybody warrants being part of the conversation, I think, but I think it was a good combo. I'm sorry that I threw your Prince jerseys under the bus a little bit there, but
I think it was more upbeat than it could have been. You know, it's more.
Did you expect anything less from me?
I expected more optimism on the Prince jerseys, but that's about all.
Hey now. It's because I was too optimistic about the other jerseys. So it's still all ties back into that. If we would have recorded this right after last night's game, we probably would have.
I
think that was the most frustrated I've been.
Sorry, disappointing.
As a fan.
Yeah, sorry, disappointing.
Yeah, it was bad. But hey, it's in the rear view. Yeah. We'll look ahead to Monday. They play Memphis. Do you think they match up good with Memphis? Or like, what are you expecting to see? Especially if D'Angelo Russell is back.
I actually think they match up okay with them. Like, better than previous seasons. Anytime Cat doesn't have to play Jonas Valanciunas, it's a good thing. I don't know, contrary to, I think, popular belief that I've seen around a little bit, like, Cat matching up against Steven Adams is always a good thing, in my opinion. Like, Steven Adams cannot guard Cat in any capacity. He's just, I know he's big and he's strong, but, like, he seems to be one of the few dudes that Cat always drags out to the perimeter and just toasts.
I would love to see what their, like, matchup stats are.
I think
are.
They'll probably put Jaren Jackson on Cat and maybe, but like, that's the thing is, like, Jaren Jackson isn't a good defender. I love Jaren Jackson and like, he has the reputation of a good defender because that's what he was supposed to be, but he's not. Like, he's an awesome offensive player and an awesome shooter at his size, but like, either of those guys matching up against Cat, even Jackson as the weak side guy, like, I think Cat will probably feast. Morant is going to score a bunch, I think. Like, he's had an awesome season, Jar. So,
what do you think they'll put on?
I think they'll start J.O. I think they'll start J.O. Okay. And they'll put him on him now that we're...
And put Jaden on Jaren?
Yeah. Yeah, because Jaren is not really a threat. He's a lob threat, but he doesn't score inside at all. He shoots threes.
And he's not a rebounding big either. Exactly. I think he averages only like...
And either is Steven Adams, really. Like, Steven Adams has never been like a really, really good defensive rebounder. He is a good offensive rebounder, but like, I think the main thing you have to take away from Memphis is Ja Morant. Like, you cannot let him score 45. Or you're going to lose. Like, and he can very well score 45. And he's been so, so good this season. So I think you just stick J.O. on him, which probably decides.
But if D'Lo's not back, you probably go with Pat Bev on him? And then maybe think about switching around?
I think you probably go Pat Bev, and then maybe you can play Vando or Malik Beasley, even like we were speaking about earlier. I think they actually match up pretty well with them. I hated their matchup with them in previous seasons. Marc Gasol and Valanciunas are two of the guys that just always roasted Cat. So now that neither of those
now
guys
no
are
Valanciunas.
There, I kind of feel kind of confident, and that's what hurts me every time.
I think too, the thing with Memphis was in the past, Memphis always killed the Wolves because they're really good at floaters.
Mm-hmm.
And floater is like the number one thing you give up when you're playing a drop coverage defense.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the Wolves going away from the draft coverage here, hopefully there's less floaters for Tyus,
a good point.
Ja, those players. Because that was, I mean, think about last season. The Wolves got killed by floaters.
To death, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So I think that bodes well with this new defensive scheme. But then again, like, Memphis has been pretty good. I mean, they've been slower lately. I don't know. They started out really hot.
They got,
I think they've lost
demolished.
Now.
They got demolished their last game, which I don't know. Is it a good thing?
By
or
Washington.
A bad,
by
yeah, like I don't know if that's a good 30. Thing or a bad thing. Like, will they come out kind of hungry, or are they regressing back a little bit back to like what they might be without Valanciunas in the lineup, who was really good last season? So I think
it's they had two like pretty close losses or pretty close wins against Denver too. So like,
yeah,
I'd say they're in the same echelon as like talent as the Timberwolves, but they've just been executing and like shooting the ball better.
Taylor Jenkins is an awesome coach as well. So
I think so too.
So is Finch, I think, but you know, it's like I said, I think when Ja plays poorly, they lose. They've really fallen more into like that Clippers kind of like, if their best player doesn't play well, you can beat them.
And
so it's all about,
and I think the Wolves are due for some good offense. They're
please,
just due for some
please,
good offense.
Just or like just lose by 8 points all game. Don't get up by 20. Don't do that to me again. If you get up by 20, win by at least 10, please. Or just win by at least
10. I called the game in the first quarter. I'm like, this game's over. The Clippers game, I was like, there's no way like it's going to go bad. And it did, unfortunately, is like, I felt like a Ryan Saunders.
Yeah, I'm so jaded that I always think the Wolves will lose. At any point, I'm confident the Wolves will lose. Like, as soon as, you know, the Clippers hit like 1-3 and you felt the energy kind of drained from the building a little bit. It was like, yeah, the Wolves going to lose this. And
They finally hit their first three in the third quarter, and it was just downhill from there.
The refereeing was awful, awful, awful. And we don't need to spend any time on that, but awful, awful, awful.
Awful. That's like the perfect word for it. Embarrassing also.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, I think we've taken enough of your time. thank you so much for doing this. This was, I think, a really good free flowing conversation that wasn't just mucked up by like trying to fill space. I think we talked about a lot of stuff. This is your first time here, right?
I think it is. Yeah. No, I had an awesome
time. We talked
time,
a couple
man.
Times on your pod, but the time zone thing just really limits it, but I'm glad we could
do
annoying.
It. Thanks for having me on, man. I always appreciate you, and I had a lot of fun today. So thanks for having me on.
Again, if you haven't already, it's howlsandgrowls.substack.com, correct?
That is it. Or just go onto my Twitter and you'll find me kind of
easy
self-promoting.
Onto the Twitter.
Constant self
probably pinned tweet.
Yeah.
Probably pinned tweet because man's got to make money. but seriously, Jake does write some of the best. If you want to learn more about specifically about the game of basketball, you have to read Jake, because all the breakdowns, film review, that type of stuff, he's just A1 from day one with that. But also the player grades are awesome. The three sentences talking crap about whoever, just whatever.
I think that's where I have,
it's awesome.
That's where I have my
that's
most
probably
fun.
The most fun.
Yeah, and they're all free. They're all free. So you don't want to pay me, which I understand. You don't want to pay for anything to do with the Wolves right now. Head over there, and there's a couple of free things every week. So and straight after every game, I'll have free player ratings, which I try and keep pretty light and pretty fun, because the team is not that. So
They're light. They're small. They're light.
They
haven't been fun though. But I was, quick story. I was trying to subscribe to your Substack, and the bank denied the charge because it was in Australia. So I had to call the bank, and I said, "No, you got to unblock Australia because I need this transaction to go through." Again, go over, subscribe, like you said, on his Twitter. But again, thanks, Jake. This was fantastic. Hopefully, maybe the two of us combining with this podcast can shed some good faith into the Wolves, because we need it. We need it bad. I can't suffer another loss, man. Yeah. Especially not on a Monday.
I think they've lost all their Monday games this season. So
Yeah, that sounds about right, because the third game of the season would have been
that Monday. That Monday target center energy is low.
The Orlando game was Monday. Yeah, nope.
Maybe the road. Maybe,
but it's not in Target Center. It's not at the Target Center.
A road trip out to Tennessee.
Yeah, get under. Yeah, for sure. All right, well, this is the longest outro ever, but this has been the Believe in Timberwolves podcast presented by BetOnline. Thank you, Jake. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and I will be back hopefully next week. I don't know, probably sometime, unless I just quit if they keep losing. But anyways, peace out.